This little three-chapter book was written near the end of the Old Testament, and it was written during a time when the nation of Babylon was taking over the world. Quick history lesson, the nation of Israel split in two after Solomon, right? Rehoboam, he took the southern two tribes of Israel, and then Jeroboam took the northern 10 tribes, and those two groups, the southern kingdom Judah and the northern kingdom Israel, never really got along great after that. They were still all Israelites, but the northern tribes worshipped false gods, and the southern two tribes, Judah, well, for them, it was hit and miss. Sometimes they had a good king, sometimes they had a bad king. And even their good kings that tried to worship God usually ended up bad somehow by the time their life is all said and done. And by the end of all this, the world empire in that part of the world at that time was the Assyrian Empire. And they were mean. They were cruel people. They would torture their prisoners. They would take them out of their homes and burn their villages and enslave them. And the Assyrian Empire took over the northern 10 tribes in this way. And after several decades, they began to lose their power. They had a new empire, a new emperor take charge. And then the next empire that took over was the Babylonians. The Babylonian Empire took over, and they were threatening to come in and take the southern two tribes of Judah as well. And that's when this book was written, around the time that Assyria was crumbling, Babylon was rising, and Judah was falling apart. And so you have Assyria, this wicked nation, crumbling. Babylon, this wicked nation, rising. And then Judah, led by none other than the terrible king Jehoiakim. And he was no good. Judah was also becoming wicked. Another prominent name during this time was the prophet Jeremiah. He was getting himself in trouble all the time because he was prophesying the truth and nobody wanted to listen to him. Now, one man writes this about this period of time. He says, these catastrophic events of the last decades of the 7th century B.C. and the first decades of the 6th century B.C. left many people... Did it say 7th, 6th? I thought it might say 20th, 21st century A.D. You could change that, okay? Left many people reeling and disillusioned. It was an agitated time characterized by rapid political change, international turmoil, bloody military encounters, and a growing rebellion against the demands of the covenant by the great majority in Judah. It does sound a little bit like today, doesn't it? And here you have this prophet, Habakkuk, trying to make sense of it all. Of course, today we have terrorism at home and abroad. We have floods, fires, earthquakes, wars, impossible wars, espionage, nuclear threats, realignment of nations, economic uncertainty of all kinds, presidential election cycles, persecution of Christians globally, social tensions in the U.S., and that's a very American-focused list. There are other things, depending on where you're at in the world, going on. Persecution of Christians. And here you have this man, Habakkuk, and he is not content to take the facts of what are going on at face value. He brought these things to God, and he talked to God about them. Is this working? Just a second. He brought them to God and exercised faith, wrestling with these things. And I think this is one thing we need to be careful about ourselves by way of just a lesson tonight. Sometimes we take what's happening in the world and we either ignore it or we stress out about it. And what we should do is simply take whatever we find out about what's going in the world, we should take it to God and talk to Him about it. That's what we should do. So that's what Habakkuk did. He's unique because he is not a prophet who just got a message from God and then walked out to the king or walked out to the public or walked out to the temple and preached the message, told people what to do, told people what was going to happen. He took evaluation of what was going on in the world, and he first went to God and talked to him about it. He wrestled it through with God. And we see, just by way of overview, that he began this book with a conversation with God. Verses 1 of chapter 1 all the way through the end of chapter 2, the first two chapters, are an extended conversation that Habakkuk has with God. And let's take a look at that briefly. It begins, this conversation with God, with Habakkuk asking God a question. If you look in verses 2 through 4, he says, "O Lord, how long shall I cry and thou wilt not hear?" And the idea here is, how long do I need to call out to you for help before you do something, before you say something? How long? And you can see here the stress that he is facing. He's trying to make sense of things. Well, God answers him. And God says in verses 5 through 11, "Behold, ye among the heathen, and regard and wonder marvelously." What does this mean, to regard and wonder marvelously? It means, pay attention, look at what I'm going to do, and be astonished. Be astonished. Sometimes we look at things that are happening in the world, and we think to ourselves, this is really bad. This is really terrible. And we go to God, and we're saying, what are you going to do? This is a mess. And finally, God gets us thinking a little bit more clear. And we realize, wait a minute, actually, he's doing something amazing. He's doing something very difficult. He's doing something very impossible and astonishing. I'm reading it wrong. So he has this conversation with God. God answers him. And then he says something else. Verses 12 through 17 of chapter 1. He says, "Art thou not from everlasting, O Lord? My God, mine Holy One, we shall not die. O Lord, thou hast ordained them for judgment. O mighty God, thou hast established them for correction. You are of purer eyes than to behold evil, and canst not look on iniquity. Wherefore lookst thou on them that deal treacherously, and hold your tongue when the wicked devours the man that is more righteous than he?" And then he goes on to say that this person, or this man, or this nation, they take people like fishes in a net, and they butcher them, and they sacrifice them, and they do mean things to them, and slay them. And God answers him then in chapter 2, verses 1 through 5, we get down to the verse we're looking at tonight, verse 4. "Behold, his soul, which is lifted up, is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith." Habakkuk 2, 4, "Behold, his soul, which is lifted up, is not upright in him. The just shall live by his faith." That verse that lifted up also could be translated is puffed up. And here is one thing that Habakkuk had wrong. He thought that the nation of Babylon and Assyria in the backdrop was wicked. And he was having a hard time understanding how God could let this wicked nation do things that were terrible to the nation of Judah, the Israelites. But what he had to realize was that it was even Jehoiakim and the king of Judah and many of the members of Judah as a nation who were also wicked. They were also wicked because they were proud and lifted up in their heart and did not worship God according to his ways. And following this conclusion of the just shall live by faith, there is a second part to this book. We have this conversation with God, and then we have this psalm or prayer to God in chapter 3. And I was thinking about this as we sang tonight, that last song, I just keep trusting my Lord as I go along, and he gives a song. That's exactly what's happening in chapters 1 and 2. Habakkuk has this conversation with God about all of these terrible things. And then he ends up with a song or a prayer. You say, at the beginning it says prayer, so why are you calling it a song? Well, the beginning of chapter 3 calls it a prayer, but if you look at the very end of the chapter, it says, to the chief singer on my stringed instruments. This is the only prophet, the only prophetic book, the only book like this outside of the book of Psalms that gives actual musical notations, actual musical instructions that this is something that you should sing, this is something that you should perform publicly. It's a prayer intended for music. There's really no contradiction here. And what does this song end with? Well, chapter 2, of course, verse 4, says the just will live by his faith. But notice the end of chapter 3. Here's his conclusion. Although the fig tree shall not blossom, neither, a little more poetic, neither shall fruit be in the vines, the labor of the olive shall fail, and the field shall yield no meat, the flock shall be cut off from the fold, and there shall be no more herd in the stalls. What is this saying? This is saying, though my grocery is dry, I mean my refrigerator is dry, my pantry is empty, my freezer has nothing in it, and the store is closed, and I have nothing to drink, though all of that takes place, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength, and he will make my feet like hinds' feet, and he will make me to walk upon mine high places. That is his conclusion. What is the point of all this? The point is that Habakkuk realized that God would judge his own people first, and it needed to be done, and he would do it through the Babylonian Empire. Then he would judge the Babylonians and bless his own people in the end. That was his personal realization. And he came to the point of realizing that God can be trusted. We should learn with Habakkuk that no matter how confusing or difficult or heart-wrenching life circumstances become, God is working out his perfect plan, and it is astounding. Rather than doubt and worry, we should trust and rejoice. Is there anything in your life that you look at and you scratch your head and you say, why in the world? This makes no sense. I can even make a case for it. I can invoke your holiness and your justice and your sense of goodness, and I can show you how this is not right and that is not right and that is not right. This whole thing is not right. God, why is this happening? And you can hear God saying, no, step back and be astounded. I'm actually doing something pretty amazing. It's kind of like a child walking into the woodworker's shop, and all they see is the wood chips flying everywhere and the sparks flying, and it's very scary, and they have to cover their eyes or they're going to get sparks or wood chips in their eyes. And they say, what are you doing? That's scary. And the carpenter lifts up the child and shows them the wonderful carving that he's making. No, I'm actually doing something very good, something very difficult. We look at the world today, and technically, we don't have a very mean nation just overtaking our borders and wiping out our towns and ripping us out of our homes. It's not happening right now. We don't have too much to complain about. But still, if you're paying attention to headlines at all, you realize things are kind of bad in the world, right? Have you ever in your heart said, Lord, why? Why do I have to live during all this? Why can't I live back in this time? Why is this all going on? This is so terrible. And God says, actually, I'm doing something pretty amazing. Step back and look at it. Because Satan is trying to do something really bad, and I'm actually getting something done. I'm marching toward my kingdom. I'm revealing the hearts of men. And I'm going to work everything out. What is the conclusion? Whatever happens in the world, we are all wicked. only righteous because we've trusted in the righteous one. And the person who is trusted in the righteous one by faith lives by faith. We don't have to make sense of everything going on in the world. We just know that God is doing something astounding. We step back. We just keep trusting him and we rejoice. There's something wrong with a Christian's mindset when world events make them complain. There's something wrong with a Christian's mindset when world events make them discouraged and depressed, bitter and frustrated, agitated and sorrowful. Because what God is doing in the world should make you rejoice. He is bringing something to completion. He is getting something amazing done. And knowing that fact, as messy as it may still get, we can just keep trusting our Lord as we walk along, and he will give us song. You really should be able to walk away from any news episode. Now, I don't recommend sitting down and watching news for a half hour. Let's just say you did. Do you walk away saying, oh man, that's so bad. Things are so bad in the world. Or do you walk away saying, I know that's what they're trying to say, but I'm looking at this and saying, God is doing something. Look at that. God is bringing everything to pass. He even takes wickedness and uses wickedness to bring about justice on wickedness. But no wickedness will ever be overlooked. God can do this. Satan is trying to do some really bad things. He ends up doing bad things to himself. God is so in charge of what's going on. So tonight, what I would like to do before we start praying about other things is I would like for us to pray together. And I would like for us to express our trust in God no matter how difficult and confusing life circumstances are becoming. You could have in your mind world events. You could have in your mind personal trials and tragedies. You could have in your mind anything that seems bad in this world, and you can express your trust, your unshakable faith in God tonight. You can also rejoice in God for the perfect plan that he is working out in the world today. It wouldn't be bad for a few of us just to speak out and say, God, I know it looks messy, but I want to praise you because you are in charge, and I've been reminded of that tonight, and it's all working out according to your master plan. I want to praise you.